Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on February 27, 2017. My guest today is a content developer at Microsoft, author of best-selling Effective C-Sharp series of books, and a worldwide thought leader on C-Sharp, Bill Wagner. How are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad you could be on the show with me here. When I think of C-Sharp experts, you are definitely near the top of that list. How long have you been writing C-Sharp, and how did you get started with it?
The way I got started on C-Sharp was very, very early, even before C-Sharp 1.0 was released. I was the fundamentals columnist for Visual C++ Developers Journal, and this new language was coming out called C-Sharp. That really re-energized the column in that it was already getting very difficult to write fundamental C++ topics that hadn't already been covered. You know, so when you start doing multiple inheritance as a fundamentals column, it's pretty clear that you've run out of good ideas. So I got to play with some of the pre-release bits of C#, and I really liked a lot of the decisions they made early on in the language. So we shifted the column. Elda Nelson was the editor at that time. He and I shifted the column to start focusing on getting started with C#. And we started to explore some of the early bits that were coming out and some of the things that you could do with the language. I haven't really looked back from there, and I just kept doing more and more C#, started teaching developers more about the language and about the concepts in the language, started writing books and more columns about it, and just kept going.
Yeah, that's great. And they've been some great books. I've definitely read those books multiple times. They're really great. I recommend you check them out, listeners. I'll put a link in the show notes to the Effective C# series there. Let's switch gears from the beginning of C# all the way to current day. As a previous guest put it, .NET Core is kind of like the fulfillment of a promise that Microsoft made early on for .NET to be multi-platform. And this is truly a multi-platform for developers. Let's talk about .NET Core a bit. And you're one of the top contributors and organizers of the .NET Core documentation, which is an open source project on GitHub. Did you think that even, say, 5 years ago, that you would ever see .NET documentation and .NET itself as open source projects?
Well, 5 years ago, no, I don't think so. That would have been 2012. It was interesting at that point. Some of the first things that started to get open sourced, you know, and there were some people inside Microsoft at that time, Glenn Block, Scott Hanselman, who's still there, Phil Hack, who were really interested in trying to do more things with open source and really trying to lay some of the groundwork that parts of it could be. And I think it's important to realize it didn't just flip a switch and .NET's open source one day. They started by open sourcing some of the NuGet packages that were delivered by Microsoft, you know, things like the T4 templates, I think, was one of the first ones. Parts of MVC came out open source and trying to do some experiments there. Some of the early projects were on CodePlex. I do think that some of the really big C changes were when ASP.NET Core, as it was called at that time, or ASP.NET vNext, or that project started open sourcing some of its bits. And following that with the Roslyn compilers, both C# and VB being open source, was just a huge C change. You know, that day in build when Anders, in his keynote where he talked about the project, pressed the button on stage to make Roslyn open source. I had some friends who were working backstage and were seeing just this spike in CodePlex traffic that they'd never seen before. And I think you see, as a company, for Microsoft, and I was not an employee at that time, but once you see that kind of positive response, then I think you realize you're doing the right thing and it's the direction you should keep going in. But I think it really took some people early on to start talking about this concept and start to wade in very carefully and prove the point that this was a good idea.
Yeah, and we're seeing just a huge change overall in Microsoft and their approach to open source. And you certainly mentioned a few things, but the fact that Bash is now in Windows and SQL Server is going to be released for Linux and Microsoft's part of the Linux Foundation, you know, things like that, just unimaginable to myself 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
And Google is part of the .NET Foundation.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you know, it's really interesting to watch. You know, and in addition to Bash on Windows, there's an alpha open source release of PowerShell on
That's
Linux.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so you really can pick your platform and do the things that you want to do and find a lot of great tools and a lot of great collaboration.
Back to the .NET Core documentation, what do you think is the best thing about the documentation itself being open sourced?
I'm going to put two different things out there because, you know, one that we're already seeing and one where we're still learning. First, where we're already seeing things is we're finding people who, when they're reading something in the docs, if they find a mistake, you know, sometimes even small typos, they just edit it on GitHub and we have a pull request. Gee, there's a typo here, you're missing a comma or a period or whatnot. You know, that actually takes readers no more time than opening a bug. And in fact, the engineering team worked hard to make it so you can just do this really easy. You know, there's this button that says edit this on GitHub, and you edit it, and then from the GitHub window, it just says, okay, you want a PR for this? Yes, boom. And now that even took less time than opening another window, going to some other bug database and submitting an issue or whatnot. So we're seeing that already, and we're seeing people review the documents, giving us feedback on things that are and aren't clear. You and some other community members have started to write some topics for us. The ASP.NET team also has got some community members that are writing content that they think is important. I don't think we've reached where we want to yet. I really want to see more community members help us prioritize things that are unclear, you know, help us understand where developers are getting stuck or getting confused or not able to solve the problems they want to solve, you know, which can help us drive what content do you need, what things are hard to use. And where we have thought leaders that are in the community to contribute and bring us their own ideas and help make all of it better. And, you know, and that's where I think we still have a ways to go to really get that, you know, both the experience and the momentum going where we want it to.
I agree. I think those are definitely the benefits, and that's sort of the trend now in documentation. Even at my employer Couchbase, we've started to add those edit in GitHub links to our documentation. So I think that adds a level of engagement there. And it also, you know, helps to relieve some of the strain. Like you said, some of the overhead involved in creating tickets and going through the whole process when someone can just open up a pull request and submit the typo fix. Are there any downsides of .NET Core docs or just docs in general being open source? You know, what are some of the unique headaches compared to writing docs in private?
There are a couple different things that can cause some issues for us or make things somewhat hard. One is, and you've probably seen this writing some topics for us, is you can do a build that helps you see the doc set when you're writing something for us and making a large contribution. But what you build is not quite the same as everything that we build when we put the doc set together. And there's a little friction there that I'd like to get as small as possible. Some of that has to do with some of the other things we incorporate that would make it really hard to do your own build of the full doc set. You know, for instance, if you visit docs.microsoft.com, you can see that .NET Core is only one part of what's on that site. To validate your own work and make sure it builds and make sure it looks good, it's hard for you to, you know, you'd have to grab all these other repositories as well. We integrate with third-party systems like Livefire for commenting on articles and so on. That's going to be hard to build remotely. You know, so not everything that goes into building the site is open source. So that part means that your experience contributing for us is a little different than our internal experience. And we're trying to find ways to make that experience easier. You know, one that you may see is right now we do builds when someone submits a PR. And we're trying to open up that site so that you can see your built site when you're done. One issue there is just trying to make sure that the PR builds not show up or not be crawled by search engines. So we're trying to figure out a few solutions there. The other one that's really interesting and tricky is to make sure that what we do open and in public doesn't accidentally leak something that's not supposed to be public yet. For us, it's not too hard because .NET Core is itself open source. So if we're writing something about whether it's .NET Core or the C# language, which is an open source project. For me, it's pretty easy in that if the C# team is talking about it on the Roslyn repo or the C# language repo, then there's no reason I can't talk about it on the docs repo. But for instance, say Visual Studio is not an open sourced project yet. If it ever will be, I don't know. So there are things that may be announced that you haven't seen, and we have to be careful about creating documentation to go live when a release goes out, you know, that we can flip the switch and do some work that maybe the public can't see until it's ready to be public. And that dance is a little tricky.
It's still the case that Microsoft is not a completely open source company. So one of the unique challenges you have then is you have sort of one foot in each world right now, and you're trying to carefully straddle that.
Well, and to some degree, that may always be true, right? There are products that I don't know that it makes sense to open source. There are a lot of developer tools where it does.
So I came across .NET Core repository via a site called upforgrabs.net, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's a great site to help you find open source projects that are in need of help. Do you think that .NET Core docs in general is a good place for people who are new to open source to start out?
Maybe. I think that depends on your skill set. Okay. I think there are some people who are very good at explaining technical concepts. And if that is a skill that you have, I think that is contributing to the docs is a great way to do that. There are other people who may be great at writing tests for code and beefing up test coverage in libraries. In that case, pick a project that, you know, may have some great functionality, but they're, for historical reasons, their test coverage isn't where they want it to be, and pitch in there. You know, maybe you're great at UI design. Pick a project that needs UI design. So I think for the set of people who are good at taking a technical concept and explaining it, you know, whether it's the peers or people you work with or people you mentor, then I think this is a great opportunity. But it depends on what your skill set is and where you want to take that skill set.
We might come back to the topic of other open source projects that are worth checking out. You've probably forgotten more about C# than most people know. So from your perspective, what do you see as something that's maybe really interesting in the future for C# or .NET that's, you know, coming out now or will be coming out soon?
I think we're at a real interesting inflection point for the language, both as a really great opportunity and as a very interesting risk. If you look at what's coming out in C# 7, you're seeing the value tuples feature and an initial exploration into pattern matching expressions. Those two things are a big change for what has historically been an object-oriented style of a language. Right? Tuples are now unnamed types that are really based on the shape of an object rather than the name and naming all the fields and properties. So that's a big shift in design paradigm. Pattern matching as well is a huge shift in terms of how you think about problems. You know, rather than basing control flow on imperative statements and sometimes making use of inheritance, now you can start to make generalized queries about a variable, regardless of its type, starting to get into that, you know, the shape of the variable and the values of different properties, and start to affect control flow from that. So that's going to be a very, very interesting and very rich set of changes in the language in terms of how things may happen. The other one that's on the horizon, which may or may not happen, but is very interesting, is the idea of adding to C# at this late date the concept of non-nullable reference types, and to do it in a way that really encourages developers to go down that road where, as much as possible, reference types are non-null, and bake that right into the language. That's a really interesting problem because, you know, if we could go back to C# 1.0 and introduce them at that point in time, you don't have all this code out there that would suddenly break. Trying to do it now, if it's done just as an add-on that people opt into, it probably doesn't help much because people won't opt into it because of the cost. If it can be done seamlessly so you can turn it on when you're ready and make use of it and drive it through all the source code you have to maintain and extend, and it becomes an encouragement to everywhere you can introduce non-nullable reference types, that's going to be a huge benefit for correctness for C# developers.
Well, you're not kidding. I've probably seen about a million null reference exceptions in my time writing code.
There's a very interesting article about it called, I think it's the $1 billion mistake.
Yeah.
It's not just .NET or C#. There are a lot of environments where null is a problem. So that's a huge, interesting thing to try to solve with a slate date. And that gets to the concept of the risk behind C# language design now. You have this huge installed base of developers that have grown accustomed to C# and are good with it and really like the language as well. And we run this risk of becoming a very expert-friendly language, meaning that the language can't attract new developers because as it adds more and more features, it gets more and more complicated. Probably the most interesting discussions on the repository of new proposals is how do we put these into place and do the things we want to do so the language is more powerful for people who already know C# and already are productive with it, and yet still keep the language approachable for people who've never used it. And I think that's going to be a very interesting balance over the next 5 to 10 years for C# to remain relevant both in terms of how technology advances and in terms of being able to attract new developers and not be just huge.
Speaking of new developers, is there anything you can recommend for listeners who want to learn more about C#, .NET Core, .NET Core Docs, or just open source contribution in general?
So I'll start with some of our own content. We are really working hard to try to put together good, solid, getting started material and trying to organize it in such a way that you can take it in bite-sized chunks. You know, here's just Hello World. Now here's Hello World, and we're going to add the idea of breaking this into a library. You know, here's how we'd add unit testing to it. Here's how we'd run it in a Docker container. You know, and each of these are meant to be fairly small. You know, I just rattled off 4 or 5 of them that we'd hope we'd get to, that someone who's looking for those things could get to in 10 to 15 minutes each. You know, and we intend to continue to write those for a lot of the concepts that either beginning developers or developers that are new to .NET would need to learn to be productive. You know, Pluralsight has great content. Lynda.com, Coursera, there are a lot of good getting started places. Code Project, C# Corner, any of those are all really, really good resources to get started. If you're primarily interested in web, you know, the ASP.NET site is great. If you're looking at mobile and such, the Xamarin tutorials are really good resources. Xamarin workbooks are a great, great learning tool. I think that should keep you busy for a while. I would add, if you're brand new to C#, Mark Michaelis's book, Essential C#, is an excellent first book on C#. And then, as we talked about in the opening, Effective C#. And then I'm finishing up new edition of More Effective C#, are meant to be a great second and third book on the language.
Is there anything else you'd like to plug before we wrap up the show?
You know, I would say get involved in the community as much as you can to where you want to. There are ample open source projects. Find something that really engages you in terms of a mission of a problem you want to solve or a space you want to contribute. Whether that's in docs, where you're helping people learn, whether that's in creating libraries, or creating tools that people can use. I'll plug a charity I work with called Humanitarian Toolbox, where we build open source projects to support disaster relief efforts. And if you head over to github.com/htbox, you will see a list of the projects we work on. And we would love to have contributions. Everything there is applications. It's all open source. You get to play with ASP.NET Core on one of them. One of the other ones is a traditional ASP.NET site, which we might be converting to Core, so you can learn about migrations. We're looking at some mobile apps that may be getting added in the future. We've got some proposals for a couple big data applications. Hopefully you can find a place to contribute there.
My guest today has been Bill Wagner. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2017. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Audacity, Skype, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy the music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com to submit your name and idea.